Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark, and I'm a spiritual adventurer. I suggest you become the same. This show is going to encourage you to keep an open mind and to prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite all our seeming differences, we are all basically the same. Now, this is a no-holds-barred show. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. As for me, I believe that we all create our own heaven or hell. Over the years, I have evolved spiritually and have finally found a church that embraces my own belief system. That is, that all religions and spiritual beliefs serve a higher purpose and that we are all basically one. So I believe. Now, tonight, I have a special guest, a Reiki master who practices Sufism and uses that to find Jesus. Her name is Regina Du, and I will be introducing her in just a few moments. Just to let you know a little bit about what's going on with me, as I've mentioned in recent weeks, I'm busily working on Book 14 in my Sister Mary Olga Fortitude series. And for those of you that haven't listened before, this is a series, it's a religious and social satire with a spiritual message, and it's about this crazy nun named Sister Mary Olga Fortitude, and she loves her bourbon, she loves her Marlboros, she believes that if she smokes, she's sending up smoke signals to God and that her prayers are more fervent and answered. And the Reverend Mother's a reformed prostitute, the convent chef is a gay cowboy and a self-described sex maniac, and all of the characters are deliciously dysfunctional. And it is just hilarious. I've gotten 5 out of 5-star reviews on both of the first two books that are out now. And if you're looking for a Christmas present, they're written under the pen name of Davis Aujourd'hui, and you don't need to remember that, although Aujourd'hui means today in French. But I'll give you the names of the books now, and you can look for them on Amazon.com. The first book in the series is The Misadventures of Sister Mary Olga Fortitude. And the second book is Babes in Bucksnort. So there you go. That's my own little promo for myself and my books, which I hope you'll enjoy if you get them. Just to let you know, next week my guest is Beth Miller, and she is a vegan and an animal advocate who is also a poet, and she will be with us at the same time next week. So I hope you'll join us. She's also a student of Carl Jung. I was trying to think of what else I was going to say about her. And so she will be sharing her philosophies, ways of life, her spiritual beliefs, and that will be a very interesting show. But now I want to read the biography of tonight's guest so that you'll have a little bit of an idea about her background before I introduce her. Regina Du grew up in Glens Falls, New York, with two brothers and one sister, where she attended St. Mary's Academy, and later Lady Cliff College in Highland Falls, New York, where she received her Bachelor's of Arts degree in Social Studies and Psychology in 1968. She is a mother to one son, Aaron, mother-in-law to Marissa, and grandmother to two children, Maddie and Alex. Over the years, she's been involved in community work, including the Thresholds program in the Schenectady County Jail. She's been a Medicaid caseworker, a drug and alcohol counselor, a teacher, and a cook at the free school. She currently serves as the Vice President of the North Albany Neighborhood Association and is a volunteer Reiki practitioner at the Albany Damien Center, which is the Capital District's AIDS drop-in center in Albany. Her spiritual life has been enriched by practicing transcendental meditation, participating in the 40-month-long master's training course of the Eureka Institute, which is a school exploring consciousness. She studied the works of Hazrat Inayat Khan, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, and is an initiate of the Sufi Order International. Also, she has studied the Course in Miracles, which I have studied myself, the Omega Shakti System, Transactional Analysis, the Option Process, and Cognitive Therapy. She studied and practiced UC Reiki Healing with Alice Mazur and Harry Denker since 2005 at the Albany Damien Center. She received her master's level in 2011. In August of 2011, she was introduced to the Shinky Method by Don Beckett and Dragan Pavlovic. Did I get that right, Regina?
Pavlovic, I believe.
Pavlovic. Well, anyhow, folks, that is the voice of Regina Du. Welcome tonight. How are you, Regina?
Oh, I'm great, David. Thank you very much for inviting me to be with you tonight. I consider it an honor, and I'm very nervous, but I hope I am able to share something that somebody would benefit from. One of my
Go ahead.
One of my favorite singers at the moment is a man named Nako Bear, in Medicine for the People. And one of his lines is, "I am no master, I know nothing. I am a servant, I know something." I'm just a regular person living on your street. I'm nobody special, but I think we're all special children of God.
I do too, and I was going to disagree on that statement. I think that it's all so important that we affirm our own unique beings, that I do believe that none of us are any better or worse than anybody else, and I'm just an ordinary person, as you've said that you are, but you are indeed unique and special, and I'm glad to have your spirit with us tonight. And when we talked earlier today, you had asked if you could share a special prayer that's meaningful to you. Would you be willing to do that?
I would love to.
Thank you.
Yeah. This is how we begin many things in the Sufi order. We say, towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. May we be guided.
Yes. Amen. Well, that's beautiful. And from the very little, and I do mean very little, I know about Sufi, it seems to be a practice that is based on love. And I'll never forget the time that you and I did a Sufi dance together.
Yes.
and in that dance, folks, it is very intimate. And it can be overwhelming, but it is such a beautiful thing. You stand in front of each other, and each person places their hands on the other person's heart. And then what do you do with the other hand, Regina?
Well,
embrace the other person?
You can spin. The other hand can be in the air. There's many different Sufi dances. We did the one that Alice was training us in, but I work with an organization called Dances of Universal Peace, and we do many, many kinds of dances. They were founded by Murshid Sam Lewis. in the 70s. He was one of the first initiates of Hazra Inyat Khan here in America. And he was a great teacher in his own right, and he was the founder of the Ruhaniyat order of Sufisms here in America, who do the dances of universal peace worldwide. You know, they're just all the time everywhere. And that's how, that was my first introduction to Sufism, was I was in New York City in, I think it was 74, and a fowler of, they call him Osho now, back then his name was Rajneesh, and they said, you want to go dancing? And I was always up for dancing.
Uh-huh.
So they took me to St. John the Divine's church, cathedral, and there were hundreds of Sufis there doing these circle dances. And I just said, who the heck are these people? You know, they just blew me away with their love and their kindness. And they were the kind of people
that's what
I've been
Right. Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you. This is one of the problems of doing radio when the other person is not right there so that you can see or sense when they're going to stop talking. But I was going to say the one thing that impressed me about the dance, which was so loving, is that we look into each other's eyes and just pass on through our eyes whatever messages of love that we want to the others as we rock and slowly turn around in a circle. And it was just so intense, and I felt so much love coming from you. I just felt so safe, secure, and loved. It was a wonderful experience, and I apologize for cutting you off. But I wanted to ask you to start kind of at the beginning of your life, just to give folks a sense of what your life experience has been. Can you tell me a little bit about your family of origin?
Yes. I'm hearing Julie Andrews singing, let's start at the very beginning.
Right.
Way back, long time ago, in Glens Falls, in very beautiful wooded areas, mostly, in the Queensbury area on Glen Lake. Most of my childhood was spent outdoors, playing in the great outdoors, in the water, in the woods, with the young children, and my relatives. My dad was a Marine. He fought in the South Pacific and all those fun spots like Iwo Jima and Guadalcanal. And as I grew older, I realized I never really knew my dad that well. I wish I had listened to him more. You know, I'm sure he had a great deal to talk about. But he was a great father. He brought to his job as parent his own difficulties. His mother died when he was young. So, you know, he did the very best he could. And my mom, the same thing. It was Jim and Dorothy. They were great people. She was born
in
Vermont.
Oh, I just wanted to comment. I loved the way you said that your father did the best that you could, because I think so many people may look back on childhoods that did not sound as happy as yours and try to blame their parents for their problems, or may not have found any healing around their connection to their parents. But I think it's important for all of us to remember that on the journeys, the life journeys that we're on, we all do the best we can with what we have, and there's always room for growth. So I apologize for interrupting you again. Please carry on.
Oh, you got to jump in, because once I get going, I can go on forever. So, but you know, and with my dad, I loved him so much, and my mom. Now that she is gone, I miss her more and more. I wish I could talk to her more.
Mm.
She also came from a very difficult background. I did a lot of therapy in my life to understand them so I could understand myself.
Connie, you're not alone.
And the more I understand, you know, I think the deeper you understand yourself, you can understand others and forgive, you know, and I'm just very grateful for what they gave to me and the sacrifices that they made. And I had an older brother, Jim, who's been gone about 10 years now. He was a soldier in the Army in Vietnam during the Vietnam War. And I think eventually it didn't get him over there, but it got him over here. He died a very ill homeless vet, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but he was working on his healing towards the end, and I was able to speak to him quite a bit before he passed, even though he was out in California. You know, he was in California, but I was very, very in touch with him. We discussed a whole lot, you know, and I miss him, but, you know, I feel connected with him still. And I have a younger brother, Kevin, who is way up in Vermont, who's a very dear man to me, and we're still very connected. We talk all the time. And I have a younger sister, Kathy, who lives up in Glens Falls. And, you know, I see her once in a while. My sense of family is growing away from me now, though. I seem to be just more my own person and less connected.
Mm-hmm.
That's my foundation, but now I'm just my own self now. And so, you know, I went to the Catholic school up there, St. Mary's Academy, great school. We're going to have our 50th anniversary this year of my class.
Oh, my.
Yeah, there's a number of us that stay together through emails and keep a very positive connection.
Well, that's quite a milestone, Regina. I wanted to back up a little bit about something that you were saying that I think is so important. You mentioned two words that just stood out for me, and one was forgiveness, and the other was gratitude. And I'm wondering if you can speak to us a little bit of what gratitude has done for you in your life in terms of keeping you in a place of peace and joy and feeling safe and secure.
Means everything to me. It means everything to me. When I was a younger person, I had no gratitude. I didn't even know the meaning of the word. You know, I was a spoiled brat and didn't appreciate anything. And I was a miserable kind of person, too. Most people that know me can't believe that I was ever the rotten kind of person I used to be. You know, it came through losing a whole lot of things.
Like what?
And the more, everything.
Oh, okay.
You're
talking literally now, right?
Literally. You lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're living in a homeless shelter. Hey, you know, you haven't got 35 cents for a donut. Hey, you know, that was the greatest gift God ever gave to me, was to take everything away to show
really?
Me. Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm always blessed because I know, you know, how he takes care of me.
Well, I've never had that experience, but I can imagine that to have everything taken away from you and then come back from that to a place where to realize that your needs were being met at that time, and then to have abundance start to flow toward you again in other ways, that it would make it all the more meaningful.
Oh, yeah. It's just an attitude to me that I have to carry, and I have to keep myself in check if I ever get, as my parents used to say, too big for my britches or whatever, or not grateful. You know, I just know it hurts me when I get out of the attitude. I was in the new market nearby yesterday. People were just complaining and complaining, and I couldn't understand. And then I said, I just feel compassion for them because they don't understand. We're the most blessed country in the world. We have everything. And
yes, we are.
People, we're not grateful for what we have, you know?
I think it's so important to count our blessings. I know that I need to do that. And that is one of the things, I mean, and I know this has been your experience too, we've talked, but I've suffered from a history in my past of great devastating depressions. And now if I start to feel depressed, the first thing I turn to is counting my blessings. And invariably that makes me feel better. And it keeps me from going down that elevator shaft to a place of darkness, because I've been in a deep hole, and I know you have been too. But I'd like to get back to your early religious and spiritual practices. I know you grew up as a Catholic, and I'm wondering how that experience has influenced your faith in the woman that you are today.
Oh, again, I'm very grateful for it. You know, I've gone through times where I moaned and groaned about my upbringing, but if I didn't have that, I don't even think I'd be alive today. You know, there was a discipline and a structure and such a gift, and my parents both had to sacrifice to pay for us to go to this private school. You know, it wasn't very expensive, but it was expensive for them, and it was a gift that they gave us. And I think back on especially several teachers that I had that were fundamental in who I am today. There was a priest named Father Vicy Serka who fled from communist-occupied Lithuania at the time. He had come over, and he would teach us things. And I'd sit right up in the front of the class to listen to him because he was full of love and full of service. And I think he really understood suffering and he understood service. And he was always at the hospital visiting people and taking care of people and being kind to people. So, you know, there was another priest, Father Sininski, who I think he passed recently, another person that was always visiting the sick and doing Christ work in the community, you know.
That's what I see you do, Regina. I see you doing a lot of Christ work in your life. And I know that when you talked about some of these qualities or experiences of the priest that you were talking about the suffering, that has been part of your experience too. And I'm wondering where the God piece was in that for you coming out the other side.
Well, you're reminding me of a sentence, you know, like... let's say at one point in my life I was in the pits of hell and a door opened and there was a little light coming from it and I ran to that door and I ran out of that pit. And it was pointed out to me that if you think you opened that door, you still don't have it. And later on I got God opened that door for me out of there. And, you know, I just ran as fast as I could away from that. Because I could have...
Is that how you came to believe that there is God, Regina? Or was that part of your earlier experience?
Well, when I was young, I had a very, let's say, firm faith in what I believed and what I was taught and, you know, how I did things ritually. You know, I did this and I did that and I would do that and I would be okay, you know. It was a very ritualistic understanding of who and what God was. And then, let's say I got off the tracks and I went on the wrong path and I went away from that training and that faith that I was brought up in for a while. And there's a song Bobby McFerrin sings, "For those who have been raised by it, no discipline is easy, but it's painful." And so, you know, being without that discipline was a very painful thing. Doing things that weren't good for me was a painful thing. I wasn't having fun. And so
did you recall your Catholic roots and the discipline that you learned early on? Did that come back to you later as a structure that you realized had worked for you when you'd gotten away from it?
Happened. When I took my initiation, it took me many years following the Sufi path to take initiation. They call it taking hand, where you receive help from the lineage that you're joining. And the next morning after I took hand, I woke up at home and a choir was singing in my head, and I knew it was the choir of a church I had been going to. I had been taking a neighbor living with the virus to this black Catholic church.
What virus?
The AIDS virus.
Okay.
My neighbor had AIDS, and he wanted. I took him to church, and when he passed, I said, "Well, I really don't belong here. I'm not black, and I, you know, this is, you know." And I had stopped going there, but when I woke up that morning after my initiation, it was the choir in that church, and I knew I was being called to go back to that church. So
can you tell the listeners a little bit about what Sufism is about?
Well, there's many kinds of Sufism.
Okay.
Many kinds. And my teacher, who founded the order that I am in, his name was Hazra Inayat Khan, and he was from India. And he came to the Americas in the 20s, and was spreading the message of love, harmony, and beauty, like the prayer I said, the unity of all religions. And more as he came on in his teachings, he less identified with Sufism per se, and the message was more the message of love, harmony, and beauty.
This morning we talked, and you asked me to ask you about your butterfly story. I wondered if you could tell me that.
Okay. Well, I had been after I had gone to the dances in New York City. The Sufis moved up here to New Lebanon for New York. They have a headquarters in an old Shaker village on the mountain in New Lebanon. And I would go up there and help fix up the place and do retreats and have teachings from the teacher at the time was Pir Vilayat Inayat Khan. He was, you know, my teacher. And one day I'd come out of the meditation hall, and he was sitting on the hill teaching, and people were around him sitting on the grass, and I was watching, and I still was quite a bit in despair in the world. I was not a happy camper, but I was listening. I was yearning for the answer, and as I was watching Pierre Vilayet, I saw a butterfly start landing all over him, and I just said, there's something I don't know. I don't know what this is. Why is this happening? And so I decided to stay on the planet a while more to see.
Well, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did, Virginia, because you're a real blessing to the planet. And I think that perhaps we could make a little analogy out of this, that deep, dark tunnel that you talked about being in was like your cocoon, and that you are the butterfly that's emerged from the cocoon. And I love the butterfly story. And I love the concept of the butterfly connected to hope. My mother has a real connection to butterflies because she went to a bereavement center that embraced the notion of the butterfly as being a spirit that's freed. And so thank you
for
sharing that story.
Your mother's
had a well, mothers usually are. in the final analysis, I didn't think that many years ago, but they have a lot of wisdom. You certainly have had a rich spiritual life with all these different spiritual practices. Can you tell me? Go ahead.
I was going to tell you. Now, Pierre Vilayet Khan, the man that the butterflies landed on, was very instrumental in me really beginning to work at the Albany Damien Center, because he came there in the early 90s when the Albany Damien Center was at Grace and Holy Innocence Church on Clinton Avenue in Albany. He came and he spoke to people living with the AIDS virus. And he inspired me and everyone in that audience. I saw people change their life because of the hope he was inspiring in people. Because it was very rough then when it first was hitting. You know, people were not lasting a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But people decided to make use of their lives. That's why my friend Marcus, you know, joined the Catholic Church and started rocking the AIDS babies and, you know, giving to the community. So Pierre Vilayet Khan really inspired me to do the work that I am doing, and I always feel his presence with me when I am doing the work. He's a great, great inspiration to me in my life. And his son, continues his work, Pierre Zia Khan, is a great inspiration to me now. So I go
when
on.
When did you
David.
Start studying Reiki, Regina?
Well, everything is so interconnected.
Yes, it is.
I was working at the Albany Damien Center, and there was this lovely lady named Alice working there. Well, Alice and I had been Eucharistic ministers at the Black Catholic Apostolate Church that I joined, you know, after my Sufi initiation. I joined the Black Catholic Apostolate, and I became a Eucharistic minister, and Alice and I and her husband, Bob, served Holy Communion together. And we knew many people in the AIDS community. We worked with them. And so we had a bond then. And then I met her at the Damien Center when I was sent there again to work. And Alice at one point said, I think you should do Reiki. I think you would be good. And they started training me, you know. Harry Dankers is my other master, and we both, Alice and Harry, trained me. And that's been one of the greatest gifts in my life. I love Reiki. I love working with people with Reiki. And
can you explain what Reiki is to people who might not know?
It's called the Universal Life Force Energy. And, you know, the St. Francis prayer where you say, you know, Lord, use me as an instrument of your peace. We are instruments of his peace and his love. That's basically, to me, what it is we open ourselves to God for his love to flow through us and to reawaken the energy in the person that is receiving it, who might be asleep to their energy. You know,
and that can help at many different levels, right, Regina?
Yeah. It helps physically, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and in the past, present, and future.
I have a friend that also is a Reiki practitioner, and she goes to the same church as me, and it's interesting because she quite often picks up on people that may be in need of healing, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I see her sometimes sitting in the pew next to me, and she will be holding out her hands toward somebody in front of her who isn't aware that she's doing Reiki on them. What do you think about that?
Well, I might be from a different school because I was told to ask permission first. If somebody asks for it, I will, you know, be the conduit. You know, that's because some people don't want things sent to them, you know. Might not, but you can do it. I've been told you can do that if you feel a grave need, because if they don't want it, they're not going to get it anyways, you know. Everybody's always free to refuse something that's being sent to them. But I'd like to give the people respect that, hey, if they don't want it, I try not to. I pray a lot. I say a lot of Hail Marys, to tell you the truth, to me. Because also, in my little mind, it's when you think you see Mary and the grace that's coming out of her hands, you know, on the miraculous medal. I don't know if you know the miraculous medal.
I don't. But I'm actually not Catholic.
Okay. Well, there's a medal, and it has a picture of Mary, and there's rays of energy coming out of her hands. It's called grace.
Okay.
And that's what Reiki is to me. Before I was even doing Reiki, I'd picture Mary over me, sending the grace down on me.
Oh, so, I like that image very much.
Yeah, me too.
You talked about your work with people at the Damien Center who have HIV and AIDS.
Yes.
I wonder if you've ever pondered over the years, I mean, it's been around for 30 years now, and I have lost many, many friends to that disease. In fact, I stopped counting in the late 80s when I hit 25. And I wondered if you've ever pondered... especially with the work that you do, I'm sure it's been much higher than that. But I wondered if you pondered what the meaning of AIDS is, or what does it mean to you?
Well, at one time, I remember somebody saying that our planet is ill. And these things are showing up in people. It's like almost like the canary in the coal mine. It's a warning that something is very wrong, and our planet is very ill. And sometimes, you know, the people that have passed were some of the most sensitive souls on the planet. They're very in tune, Yeah, you know?
Mm.
And so they picked up these pathogens or whatever that thing is. You know, the person that does the Bach flower remedy says all disease is spiritual in its nature from the very beginning.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I like the term dis-ease because I find that when I'm not at ease within myself, that I'm more likely to manifest mental health problems. When I'm not
physical.
Taking care of myself at a spiritual level or an emotional level, I may be more prone to getting some kind of illness, a physical illness. So I really, really believe in that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the one explanation that I liked the most about AIDS was what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said.
Okay.
And she said that she thought that what it was about was that it was here to teach us that we needed to practice unconditional love and that it would not go away until we learned that lesson. And I don't know, but I thought that was a very interesting take on it.
And oh, I love her.
I love her too. Yeah.
Yeah.
She had such wonderful things to say. And for anybody that doesn't know of her, she did a lot of work in the area of death and dying. And I would encourage you to go on to Google her name or go on to Amazon.com because there are many, many wonderful books that she's written over the years. And speaking of books and miracles, I know you've been a student of the Course in Miracles. I wondered what aspects of the Course have been most significant to you.
Well, forgiveness, number one.
Mm-hmm.
I got stuck in the middle of that course on the forgiveness because I was deeply into not forgiving myself. So I had to learn.
I can relate to that.
Number one, I wasn't God, and I had to give out of the place of God so he could forgive me. That's a rather simplistic term, but of way of looking at it. But, you know, I was being the judgmental God, and that's not who God is.
No, it's not.
But I had to, you know, unlearn. A lot of my revelations have been unlearning what I was.
I can relate to that, too. Absolutely. I had to replace the God of judgment and fear with the God of love, the God that Jesus talked about that extends unconditional love and that forgives you even almost before you've sinned, I think. You know, speaking of that, how you needed to get out of the way of God, for people that don't know what the Course is about, could you just explain the difference between ego and spirit as it relates to the Course?
Ego is the false self. Ego, it to me, is the devil, really. Ego is the cause of all of our problems, the false ego of who, you know, this image that we build up. I have also studied Eckhart Tolle's work, and he does wonderful work on deflation. I know you know this saying, deflation of ego at depth, you know, just getting out of the way and having the spirit, who we are all at one ment with. You know, the Course talks about at one ment, atonement, at one ment.
Yes.
You know, and they talk about this holy instant, deciding again to choose forgiveness, always choose forgiveness, and not to be holding enmity towards yourself or anyone else. Forgiveness is always the answer. And I can't tell you how many rough spots that has gotten me out of. Choose again in this holy instant. You know, you always have a holy instant to remember who you are, You're part of a very loving God. I call God sometimes, it's a shining, marvelous thing that we're all part of, and it goes on forever, and it's eternal, and we're all in it. One of my songs from Eureka that I always loved was, God is eternal, is in all of us, is in everything, is one without second. And, you know, I have all these little tunes. Often I'll stop thinking and just have a little tune in my head of, you know, a reality instead of my Bolshoi Ballet, as I call it, the crap running in my head, which has nothing to do with reality, you know.
No. Well, that's mostly ego stuff, don't you think?
Yeah. They call it chicharrera. Chicharrera. Chicharrera? I can't say the word, but...
Well, I don't know, but I like the sound of it.
Crickets in the head, you know, chirp, chirp, chirp. And so through prayer and meditation, we get out of our heads so we can be in this holy instant, you know.
How did you get to such a place of conviction that there is God? And what would you say to, how can you relate to somebody that says there is no God, coming from a place of spirit as opposed to ego? Because I know when I'm in a place of ego, I want to try to argue my position and to prove that I'm right and you're wrong.
Yeah.
And yet, I know that I have to respect everybody and try to find that common ground. But can you tell me where your conviction comes from? Because you've spoken to me before that it's not a matter of believing in God, that you know there is a God. Can you tell me how you've come to that conclusion, and what words of hope could you offer to somebody without letting ego get in the way, to an atheist who might be dying, for example, somebody that might be dying from AIDS who doesn't believe in God?
You're touching my heart with that one right there, because I had a dear friend, and when I met him, he was a big drug kingpin, right? And he knew I was just this nice little old lady, and he told me he wanted to know Jesus. Well, he had a lot to come through, you know. He went through he had quite the life, and by the grace of God, I was allowed to know him and who he really was, and why he was the way he was. And God granted me, this is how I know God. God has granted me many things, and it's nothing that I have done at all. Absolutely nothing I've done. I told God at one point, I said, you got to come find me, buddy, because I can't do it. And God found me. He's the one.
When did that happen? What point in your life?
Well, okay, when I said, you got to come find me, I was sitting in a room. I'll say it was a recovery room. I'm recovering from many things. And it was called a point of surrender. I said, I give up, God. You got to come get me, because I'm lost. You know, I was like the little Baba black sheep. I was lost, and he had to come get me. And then my friend James, who wanted to know Jesus, I'll tell you, you know, at the end, another friend called and said, if you want to talk to James, you got to come now. And I went to the hospital, and this friend and James and I held hands and said the Our Father. And that was the last words James ever spoke.
Oh, my, how profound. How profound.
Yeah.
So you were right there when he passed.
Well, they put him on a respirator, and he was there for a few days. And I went back, and I was able to bless him and give him, hand him over to Christ before he passed.
Wonderful, and, wonderful.
You know.
Well, what would you say to an atheist to give them hope? without letting your ego get in the way?
Well, you know, I don't know if that's my position to give anyone hope or to convince them not to be an atheist or to be other than who they are. God loves them perfectly if they are an atheist.
Yes.
Everybody has their own way. Buddhists are so-called, you know, atheists, and they're the best people going. They, you know, they don't, you know, beliefs are one thing. Honoring and respecting and loving the person for who they are, period.
Just,
you know,
as they are, right?
Just as they are. They are perfect the way they are. God is a God of love and compassion. And he doesn't need us, you know.
Well, you know, I think it's the codependent in me that wants to offer hope to people, because it's been so important to me in my life during my dark moments that was the only shred that I could hang on to. And I didn't even realize I had hope, but I must have, or I surely wouldn't be here today. But I like what you had to say. That's given me a whole new perspective, because I have to watch that part of me that wants to fix other people. That's not my business.
No.
That's not my business. All I can do is be there for other people and listen to them and, you know, empathize with them. Yeah. Now, you've worked as a drug and alcohol counselor, so I'm sure that you have had to do a lot of relating with your clients. And, I mean, a big part of drug and rehab programs is connected to 12-step recovery programs. I'm wondering how you dealt with the higher power concept when you were working with your clients, because I'm not sure how that works. I've never worked with a drug and alcohol counselor, even though I'm a recovering person.
Well, I worked in different agencies. I worked for the Salvation Army. I worked for a women's recovery home. I'm remembering in the women's recovery home, we had a 12-step meeting, and I used Native American principles, and we had a talking stick, and we were learning respect for listening to each other by holding the talking stick. And we each week would go through each of the 12 steps, and we would talk about, you know, our goals and how we were going to get there without a map. We needed a map, and the map was the 12 steps of how we were going to get to our goals in life. And it was a spiritual path. Many of the women I stayed in contact with in the years past, and the ones that succeeded, and the men also that succeeded, had some sort of faith and stuck with some type of a 12-step program. I don't think you can recover or get out of that hole without it. And your quest for hope is, yes, you know, you have to. In my darkest hour, somebody had told me that there were monks on a mountain on Mount Equinox praying all night, and I just could tune into them and knew that they had faith and they would keep me going when I couldn't keep myself going.
Well, you know what I think is interesting about that faith piece is that I've been in 12-step recovery rooms where there are atheists present, and they have been able to work a 12-step program, which is a spiritually based program, not religious program, by incorporating something that doesn't have to do with God as their higher power, for instance, just the power of the group. And so from that standpoint, I can see where they're instilling faith in something that's greater than themselves and how important it is to be able to do that. We're getting close to the end, and there are a few more questions I wanted to ask you. And one of the things you told me is that your greatest journey has been being on the other side of us and them. Can you tell me what you mean by that?
When I fell through the hole, I was making a decision. I had to leave a place of comfort for me because I wanted to make a big change in my life, and I didn't want to continue with these people and that way of life. I had to make a change, and I had to let go of everything. I was a nice little white lady from the suburbs coming into the city, and, I had learned a few skills, but I didn't have that many. And that's when I went. I had to leave this one place, and I had to go to, I had no place else to go but to a homeless shelter.
Mm.
And people started showing me the ropes of how to live on the other side of, being a nice white suburban housewife that I wasn't anymore. And to live a life of survival, you know. And when people
talk about... We could do a whole show around that, you know.
And people talk about those people. And when people start talking to me about those people, I always stop them and say, you know what? I'm one of those people. So, you know... It upsets
I hate that
me greatly.
Term, you people or those people. It's just one of my pet peeves. There you go. And you're not homeless anymore. And I'm sure you feel just this tremendous, I'm imagining you feel a tremendous amount of gratitude for the abundance that's been poured onto you since that experience, but it sounds like that was a very rich experience for you.
No, the thing is, my blessing was that experience, not the stuff that's been added to it. That was the blessing. Not everybody gets that.
Okay.
And, not everybody gets that experience and gets to know that it's a wonderful experience. There was a guy on television tonight. He met his wife when he's recovering from being blown up at the Boston Marathon. And he said, I'm glad I was blown up because I never would have met her. You know?
Well, that's the thing that I've discovered in my life, too, is that some of the darkest moments in my life or some of the biggest crises in my life, some of the things that I used to judge as being so bad were blessings in disguise. The dark clouds always have silver linings, and I've come to embrace things that I've judged as horrible, like being a sex addict or being an alcoholic or being a person who's attempted suicide. I've come to see that those were all just cries for help. And that I learned from that I am not alone, that I needed to reach out for help to find a connection with other people, and I think that's what it's really all about. Can you just briefly tell me what your vision for the world is, Regina?
Oh, really? Okay, this is my dream. I'm a very simple person. How much time we got?
1 minute.
Okay. On July 4th, 1974, the whole town of Lindenville, Vermont, started dancing together at a band concert, and it just happened spontaneously and instantaneously, and nobody knew what was happening. The Holy Spirit broke out, and the whole town danced. And this is my vision for the world. Someday, we're all going to dance together. Can you see us all Sufi dancing and loving each other? Wouldn't that be the best day ever?
It would
Let's
be.
Do
well,
it.
Thank you so much for sharing that, and thank you for the blessing that you've been to this listening audience tonight and to me. So once again, we're coming to a close. We can now pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There's really no such thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We're spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.